Welcome to the Wild Podcast. Inspire people, support others' growth, and create a meaningful life. That's the mission of this podcast, and I welcome you to the community. Since you are listening to this right now, I suspect you are a curious soul who loves expanding your own horizon, learning about other people's authentic life choices, and getting inspiration to put into action what you are passionate about. My name is Tina Hewitt, and it has been a while since the last solo episode in which we talk about a specific topic aimed at expanding your horizon or deepening your understanding of it. Why should you keep listening to this episode? Well, because for starters, that is a really good question to ask, and you'll learn a great deal about getting the results you seek by asking adequate questions with a helpful mindset. If you master the art of asking questions, you are able to effectively transform personal and work environments and give a lot of value in your professional and personal roles. Intrigued yet? Let's jump right in. How do most people approach a problem? How are issues typically addressed in companies, by governments, in communities? Well, I think you'd agree that most people's intuitive first step is to investigate into what is not right. What does not work? What is deficient? What is lacking? In order then to come up with possible counteractions and finally introduce selective measures to hopefully solve the problem for the future. The process of information acquisition and analysis that comes before taking actions aimed at improving the situation may take a long time. And during this time, nothing seems to move forward. Instead, a lot of dirt is being laid bare. Uncomfortable questions are being asked, and the mental focus is going towards a depressing mountain of issues to be solved. In case the following situations sound familiar to you, don't you just love it when your company contracts external consultants to bring about a change to what's not working, and then these consultants appear on your office's doorstep with a painfully enthusiastic labor frenzy, ready to turn over every stone and disturb your workplace peace? Or don't you just love it when you finally work up the courage to consult a therapist, only to find yourself delving in the dirt of your relationship with your parents for weeks and months on end? Look, I'm not saying that trying to understand the roots of an issue in order to solve it is a bad thing per se. Being real with yourself or with the situation is an adequate starting point for positive change. As Tony Robbins, a world-class coach, likes to put it, you should not meander about your garden and chant away, "There's no weed, there's no weed, there's no weed." I'm skeptic it will do you any good in the long run if you close your eyes in front of what is and just ignore a problem. If there is some weed you want to rip out of your precious soil, you better take a good look prior to reaching your hand out in order to make sure it is aimed at the right thing. However, it won't do you any good either to sit on your terrace, discouraged, as you stare at all the weeds so much you cannot anymore see just how beautiful your garden really is. There's a striking difference between asking yourself, "What's wrong with my garden? Will I ever get rid of these uninvited inhabitants?" and instead asking, "How far can a manageable amount of gardening get me with this? What did I do last year to make my garden look so pretty?" Listening to this, I bet you immediately get a feel for how different those questions would affect you, right? So let's take a closer look here. The first pair of questions. What's wrong with my garden? Will I ever get rid of these uninvited inhabitants? What would these lead to, most likely? Feeling disheartened? Not too motivated to start this arduous, endless war with the weeds? Feeling like you are deficient? Not a good enough gardener? Not caring enough? Or envying your neighbors for their meticulous backyard, as far as you can tell, peeking through the fence. Or envying your neighbors for their high-paying jobs and their ability to hire a professional gardening service. Endless possibilities to get swept away here. And now let's imagine the effects of the other pair of questions. How far can a manageable amount of gardening get me here? And what did I do last year to make my garden look so pretty? Would these make you feel curious? Ambitious? Up for a challenge? Remembering you've got a helpful tool in your shed, reminiscing last year's summer and all those moments you spent here with friends and family members enjoying this garden's fragrances and colors? Of course, there are a million more possibilities of questions one could be asking. The selection presented before simply served as a somewhat pointed example. The point I'm trying to make is, the questions you ask yourself do not come before some sort of action. They are not a random, innocent byproduct. They are the action. They determine what comes next. They pave the way for what you are able and willing to think, to feel, to perceive, to consider possible, and to do. So what is the consequence of this? The consequence is, we'd better ask high-quality questions if we want to get high-quality answers, in whatever kind of situation we may find ourselves in. Well done, kiddo, pointing that out, you might think. But what the hell is a high-quality question? Stay with me, we're gonna get there. Let us start off by choosing an example context. Follow me to the example of a company, say a warehouse chain, that goes through some tough times, okay? Turnover is significant, and so is the sickness rate. Sales have decreased, and customers aren't as satisfied as they used to be. And management is under pressure to find the underlying causes of the negative trend and turn the ship around. If you were asked to visit the company and get a first impression, what is it that you would look for? What would you see as you arrive on site? On a side note, if you do not work with companies and big organizations in your professional life, stay with me anyhow. Everything you learn in this episode can just as well be applied to other social units like a circle of friends, a family, a sports club, a township, you name it. So, you being the external observer of this warehouse company for now, you are of course clever. You are aware of the fact that the essence of an organization is present and on display in everything you can see, touch, hear, smell, taste, but also feel, sense, and think. You know that there are tangible material aspects like the physical environment comprised of buildings, rooms, furniture, lighting conditions, temperature in the rooms, work materials, physical products, the worn-out carpets, the premium quality of the free coffee offered in the kitchen, the corporate identity colors and fonts, all seemingly small details interlock and sing a song about the organization. You know that there are also intangible artifacts like processes, regulations, roles, tasks, goals, behavioral norms, social interactions. Do people laugh? Do they shake hands or hug? How are people being hired and dismissed? What are the norms around hierarchy, around reporting chains? These aspects weave another layer into the tissue of the organization. And, you know, there's yet another component that is even less tangible, less visible, but has got an immense impact on how the organization is perceived from inside and the outside. And this is by the stories that people tell themselves and one another about the organization. Stories about what is deemed possible and not possible, about how people treat one another, about exceptional experiences such as collective successes and failures, moments of joy, of sadness, surprise, challenge, laughter, fight, and bonding. It is these stories that can create or suppress the momentum for envisioning and changing the future of the organization. It is for this reason that asking questions, and with that starting conversations among the members of an organization, is a sensitive act. The more people are witnesses of the inquiry endeavor, the more important it becomes to make sure these conversations, these acts of storytelling, are given the right spin. Remember the example of external consultants pouring in, looking for the dirt, interrogating people about why certain deficits exist? Now that would be a very public act of inquiry, which starts a non-healthy storytelling bushfire throughout the organization. But again, you are clever. You know better than walking in and trying to analyze everything and everyone to pieces before pouring your high horse advice down onto management and staff. You remember a concept you heard about in this odd podcast, a framework for organizational change called appreciative inquiry. All right, Let's transition back to you being the audience of this very podcast episode. I bet you are curious to know what this appreciative inquiry thing is all about. Appreciative inquiry, or AI in short, was pioneered in the 1980s by David Cooperada and, I am so sorry, I will get the pronunciation wrong, and Suresh Srivastava. In the decades to follow, it was applied, tested, and developed into a comprehensive method. Instead of analysis, Cooperada and colleagues speak of inquiry. And this word carries an undertone of curiosity, a willingness to learn, a willingness to open up to new perspectives, seeing possibilities not considered so far. The word appreciative expresses how this inquiry is led with respect, on eye level, in a non-judgmental way, and with a focus on appreciating what is uncovered. Appreciative inquiry as a method is a way to embrace organizational change. The following is drawn from the AI Handbook, and of course you'll find the details about the book in the show notes or on the blog on www.wild.one. As the AI Handbook puts it, it is the cooperative, co-evolutionary search for the best in people, their organizations, and the world around them. Cooperative and co-evolutionary because a fundamental principle of AI is that everyone involved, or at least as many of the people involved as possible, come together to mutually explore, envision, and create their environment. This is usually done in four steps, called the 4D cycle. The four steps are discover, dream, design, and destiny. Let's move through these four steps one by one. In step one, discover, asking the right questions is apparent. As quoted in the AI Handbook, AI assumes that every organization has something that works right. Things that give it life when it is most alive, effective, successful, and connected in healthy ways to its stakeholders and communities. AI begins by identifying what is positive and connecting to it in ways that heighten energy and vision for change. The expression, things that give life to the organization, might sound a bit bulky. What is addressed here are all the assets that an organization can draw on. Its people, acquired knowledge, past and present achievements, untapped potentials, benchmarks, peak moments, traditions, lived values, distinctive competencies, competitive edges, and learnings from the past. These are the very aspects an appreciative inquiry approach focuses on in order to foster healthy, not destructive, conversations around what works for the organization or has worked in the past. This is done because another fundamental assumption is that individuals and human systems move in the direction of what they study. In other words, what you focus on is what you get more of. AI looks at the organization as a solution to be embraced, not a problem to be faced. The aim is not to solve a problem, but to re-energize the organization at the same time. To create the energy, the momentum to start and sustain a period of change. And how is this done? You guessed it, through asking questions. For example, in individual and group interviews. In doing so, practitioners of AI take care to follow the guidelines of focus on what works rather than allowing a drift off towards complaining, blaming, and problematizing. Here is an example of appreciative inquiry interview questions. First, describe a high point experience, for example, in your organization, a time in which you felt most alive and engaged. Second, without being modest, what is it that you most value about yourself, your work, your organization? Third, what are the core factors that give life to your organization without which the organization would cease to exist? And fourth, imagine that you go to sleep and overnight a miracle has happened. Your organization has transformed dramatically into the best version of it you can imagine there to be. How would you immediately recognize the change? What is new, changed, better, more effective and successful? After that which gives life to the organization has been uncovered, it is time for step two, dream. This phase builds on the positive core that has been collected extensively in the discovery phase. Now, all people involved engage in a process of envisioning what could be. This act of envisioning differs from usual vision workshops and other methodologies in that the possibilities targeted have a strong connection to what has already been demonstrated to be possible. AI seeks out the best of what is to help ignite the collective imagination of what might be. The aim is to generate new knowledge that expands the realm of possible and helps members of an organization envision a collectively desired future. What's more, the dreaming, the imagining is fueled by exhilaration, by joy, by curiosity, by sense of adventure, by the achieved affirmation of past and present strengths, successes, and positive experiences. This fuel, ideally, keeps the engine running in the weeks and months to come. The dreams of phase 2 are then used in phase 3, design, to sketch and sculpture the actions that the community wants to take, the goals and standards it wants to manifest, the changes it wants to undergo. And finally, phase 4, destiny, is an ongoing process of learning, trying, adjusting, and adapting. The cycle, of course, is not a closed loop. Later phases might lead right back to discovery. The process is iterative and incremental. Yes, we have briefly flown over the dreaming, designing, and destiny phase. This is because an extensive decomposition of the full change cycle would become too long a lecture and be beyond the topic of this podcast episode. Our main concern today is deliberately asking constructive, powerful questions. I want to end the excursion into the world of Cooper Ryder & Co.'s appreciative inquiry with an anecdote which demonstrates that an organization does not need to be perfect in order to succeed on a few strengths that are present. Let's talk about popsicles. In the Heath Brothers book, The Power of Moments, Chip and Dan Heath report on a hotel that is simultaneously completely average and truly special. To this day, the Magic Castle Hotel in Los Angeles sports a high rating, for example on TripAdvisor, 4.5 stars, or excellent, or Booking.com, 8.8 stars, fabulous. Some reviews read like this: it's not a hotel, it's an experience. And this is not due to the fact that the architecture is spectacular, the rooms furnished excellently, or the food top-notch. The real selling point is an inconspicuous, old-fashioned red cable phone that's clinging to the yellow brick wall by the poolside. If you pick up the phone, you'll be greeted with a cheerful, "Hello, popsicle hotline." Then you place an order, and minutes later, a staffer wearing white gloves delivers your cherry, orange, or grape popsicles to you on a silver tray for free. This experience is such a powerful one that the first thing you'll find when checking out the Magic Castle Hotel on Google is an endless series of selfies with people and a certain red phone. No one comes for the housekeeping quality or the view from the balcony. There may well be other hotels around that eat Magic Castle for breakfast when it comes to these features, but people don't care. They want popsicles. They want that magic moment. And when they leave, that's what they'll remember. What you focus on is what you get, remember? You don't want to be unintentionally breeding that what does not work or is destructive by directing your mind or your organization's collective mind there. Quote, "Don't demoralize a successful workforce by concentrating on their failures. Help them over their last few hurdles by building a bridge over their successes." Thomas H. White, president of GTE Telephone Operations, 1996. So instead of inquiring about all the disciplines that your competition beats you in, ask yourself about your own positive core, about what makes you stand out, what works for you, and then repeat it, foster it, and make it bigger. They eat you for breakfast? Pah! You eat them for popsicle. Another key aspect for a successful change is to give the right dose at the right time. When you've reached a rousing energy level in a community, don't break the spirit by causing overwhelm. Find the few things that give life, that make a difference. Find the most impactful bright spots and focus on them. That's the advice given in another Heath Brothers book called Switch. Finding the bright spots is a critical part in helping to solve problems. It's stated in the book, quote, There is a clear asymmetry between the scale of the problem and the scale of the solution. Big problems, small solution. Big problems are rarely solved with commensurately big solutions. Instead, they are most often solved by a sequence of small solutions, sometimes over weeks, sometimes over decades. Be it in your company, your community, your family, ask yourself, what's the next little thing that can make a positive difference? Celebrate successes rather than punish yourself for the moments when you fail to do your best. I want to end this episode on the art of asking questions with a plea for deliberate intentions. Yes, you heard right, use intentions deliberately. Why ask a question in the first place? Sometimes we human beings ask questions with a destructive intention or effect. For example, in order to subliminally express criticism, concern, or doubt, thereby putting our counterpart down or unsettling them. In order to present ourselves as clever, reflected, knowledgeable people. In order to use it as a valve for our own fears, concerns, and pessimistic outlook. In order not to be alone with these feelings. At other times, we use questions in order to demonstrate that we care about the other person. In order to gain a better understanding of someone else's world of thought, in order to serve that person better. In order to grow and expand ourselves. In order to heighten another person's mood. In order to make them see how capable they are. In order to make them see that a world of options exists outside of their current belief system and boundaries. In order to find a solution together. In order to create something new. So make a conscious and wise choice as often as possible. By speaking, we imagine, and by imagining, we create. And by producing this podcast, we intend to make our contribution to the creation of good things in your world. We are curious to learn which aspects of this episode stick with you and what ripple effects they bring about in your life. How could you be applying one small thing of what you've just learned today? Find us on www.wild.one or on Instagram or Facebook to connect with us and leave a comment. Is there anyone you think could benefit from listening to this podcast? Let them know sharing is caring. And if you don't want to miss any of our monthly episodes, go to Spotify or your favorite podcasting service and subscribe to Wild Podcast. Enjoy your time wherever you are. I'm looking forward to speaking to you next time. And you know the drill. Until then, live wildly.